From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
John Lausch took over as the top federal prosecutor in the Northern District of Illinois 4 years ago. His office now in the middle of several high-profile corruption investigations, most notably the ComEd bribery case connected to former House Speaker Mike Madigan. Now Lausch and 55 other U.S. attorneys appointed by President Trump have been asked to submit their resignations.
Governor Pritzker announced today more Illinois residents will soon be able to get a COVID-19 vaccine.
We here in Illinois are making plans and looking ahead to the expansion of Phase 1B eligibility to people of all ages who have comorbidities and underlying conditions as defined by the CDC, as well as those with disabilities.
So more people are going to be eligible for COVID vaccines soon, but there still remains some uncertainty with Illinois' rollout. Also, the U.S. attorney whose investigation into Commonwealth Edison helped bring down the long-serving House Speaker, Michael Madigan, may himself be out of a job, and Republicans also have a new leader of their state party. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and Charlie is also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Government and Politics reporter, and joining us today we have Joe Marr, investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And Joe, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hannah, I'm going to go to you first. Before we get into the latest on the coronavirus, let's talk about this announcement that came down this week regarding John Lausch. Actually, we heard this about several other U.S. attorneys across the country and here in Illinois. But Lausch has been probably the most high profile. He is the attorney for the Northern District of Illinois. He's been asked to resign by the Biden administration. That often happens when a new president takes over. And that is one of the reasons this one is controversial, because he has really gone after political corruption. Even the two Democratic U.S. senators, Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, say they want him to continue. What's the latest with this, and does he have a chance or a reprieve to keep his job?
Sure. Like you said, it's not a surprise, when a new president comes in and would ask for the resignations of, appointees of the former president, especially if it's a president of the opposite party, and especially if it's a president like Donald Trump. There's a lot of concern about, perception of, this John Lausch was doing some pretty deep investigating into mostly Democrats that we know of, there were several investigations open. Of course, we never really know as a public when an investigation is closed or over. A grand jury could drop an indictment at any time, but we don't know what is coming around the bend. But, John Lausch is also a smart man, and he knew that this would likely happen. From what I hear, he was also maybe fishing or, trying to get hired at a private firm. But, I'm sure that he started and, the process of handing things off to his deputies. But, I think the calculation from Senators Durbin and Duckworth was that, we want to keep someone around who has been very bold and opened up investigations. And I mean, frankly, it's good for folks like Durbin and Duckworth, who also have been able to separate themselves from the state political party just by the nature of, the Democratic Party of Illinois under Mike Madigan was much more concerned always with legislative House races and the like, instead of, to some extent, the Democrats at the federal level worry about those races. And there wasn't, that's different in other states. It's good for Durbin and Duckworth to say, hey, we want someone who is going to continue cleaning up the Democratic Party, because, I mean, that makes them look good. But in terms of if John Lausch has a chance, I can't say that I know. But, the Biden Justice Department had also asked for John Millhiser to resign. And John Millhiser is the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of Illinois. And he, you know, just last week, he announced a new indictment for Sam McCann, a former state senator. I think we talked about on the show last week, Sam McCann and his campaign spending. And so he was asked to resign earlier this week, and then he put in his resignation on Thursday. And so I guess we'll see whether John Lausch follows suit or he tries to hold on a little bit longer.
Yeah, Charlie, this
one of the things about John Lausch and our two U.S. senators, he was chosen, if you will, through a blue ribbon process put together by Duckworth and Durbin. He was the recommendation of their panel that this is the guy who should be the U.S. attorney. And Durbin and Duckworth pushed for him to be the U.S. attorney. And I believe he was approved without opposition in the U.S. Senate. And so it's as Hannah said, it's good politics for them to back a guy who's built a reputation as a corruption buster. But it also is consistent with their previous stand, where they had a nonpartisan blue ribbon panel interview candidates and recommend Lausch, which they then forwarded, and they supported his appointment. And I would not be surprised to see the Biden administration agree to go along with what the Illinois senators are recommending in terms of who should be the individual who's going to be the U.S. attorney in the Northern District. And as Hannah said, there's the same thing in Central Illinois, where the two local congressmen, Rodney Davis and Darren LaHood, have urged the Justice Department to keep John Millhiser as the attorney for the Central District.
Yeah, Charlie, the optics on this thing, I mean, first of all, Lausch or anybody else leaving that position does not necessarily mean the investigation goes away. But I do think a lot of people see this and may think to themselves, this is a way to protect insiders, even if it is not, by making these types of changes. And there has been precedent for presidents to leave people in those positions, including Barack Obama. When he took over, there was, of course, the investigation into Rod Blagojevich ongoing. Patrick Fitzgerald was the U.S. attorney, and Obama wound up leaving Fitzgerald in that role. So again, like you said, there is the possibility this could happen, but it doesn't look good, I think, for a lot of people who are already skeptical of government.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Biden administration exempted two sitting U.S. attorneys, and I don't recall the jurisdiction, but who had ongoing investigations. And even if John Lausch were to leave, the investigations would still go on. There are a lot of, if you will, worker bees in the office who do a lot of the grunt work of putting this stuff together. The investigation into ComEd didn't suddenly begin when John Lausch was appointed. That's been an ongoing thing, as well as have some of these other things. So it's not going to totally end everything, particularly if there is a new appointee and the appointee is committed to rooting out public corruption, as Lausch has been.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about the coronavirus and the state, of course, still trying to get people vaccinated, announcing this week more people will soon become eligible for COVID vaccines. Joe Marr is with us. And Joe, you've been writing pretty extensively about the state's rollout. One of the latest articles that you wrote basically was not complimentary of how the state has handled this, pointing out a lot of problems that have slowed things down. Walk us through some of those. What have been some of the problems?
Yeah, well, I think probably the first red flag, if you will, was that the state back in November had put out an RFP looking for a big firm to do a project management of the vaccine rollout, which in theory sounds great, but I think for experts, the challenge was the timing. Why were they waiting until November to do this? We were basically a few weeks away from getting first shots, right? Other states had done this a couple months earlier. Eventually, Illinois just backed out of it, decided they weren't going to hire somebody. They ended up going with people they had hired internally, combined with some consultants. So the state has said that didn't really affect them, and it's hard to judge, right? But we ended up having a system where we had this decentralized nature. So we have Chicago that gets its own shots. Then we have the State Department of Health, which controls shots in the suburbs and the rest of the state. And what we could see from the outside was that we were starting to trail other states. The first few weeks, we were in the middle of states when you look at some key metrics. But then by the end of February, I'm sorry, the end of January, early February, we were like 45th in our per capita rate of residents vaccinated. That's pretty far down. And then we were, 41st in the percent of shots administered. So we started to look into that. And our big question was basically, where are these shots going? You know, who is controlling this? And what we found is it's really hard to tell where the shots are going. We put FOIAs out. I'm sure other media agencies have done that. Organizations have done that. And the state and the city won't tell us exactly where all these shots are going and who's doing what with them. They've started to put out some data showing some of the inventory and where it's going, but it's still hard to trace. So unfortunately, what they've left us with is basically their explanations of why they think things are going so slowly. What they're telling us is the 1A rollout, which was the first batch of people, the healthcare workers, long-term care workers, that it just was later than they had hoped. With healthcare workers, there was some hesitancy they didn't expect. So they took a little bit longer to try to get through those healthcare workers. With long-term care, for reasons that haven't really been explained well, this was a federal program that the pharmacies were partnering with the feds to do long-term care. And for reasons that nobody's explained to us, there's finger pointing. In Illinois, it was longer than in most states. In Illinois, it's going to be February 15th until all long-term cares have visited at least once. And to put that into context, in West Virginia, where they did not accept this federal program, they've already gotten through both shots in all their long-term care.
Now, Joe, Illinois, of course, is a much larger state, but does that have something to do with it, possibly?
You know, that's what the Pritzker administration is arguing. They're saying, hey, it's not fair to compare us to these small states. But when I was looking at it, even when you looked at what I call the big six, which Illinois is the six biggest states, when you look at the six biggest states, Illinois still did not rank very well. It wasn't the absolute worst, but it was in the lower part of the pack.
You also referred to this in the article as sort of a Hunger Games process when it comes to being able to get the vaccine. Talk about that as well.
Yeah, and that's the part that really people can see, and that's the part that they hear from their friends and their family. There are some institutions, some clinics, some hospitals that are reaching out to patients directly and saying, hey, do you want a shot? We've noticed because of your age or your occupation or whatever combination in our algorithm that you qualify. But the vast majority of people that we're hearing from are complaining that they're stuck trying to line up these shots. There's no one place to go to get signed up. You basically are cold calling places, hoping to maybe get on a waiting list, or your family and your friends are scrambling through online appointments, kind of like trying to get concert tickets in the old days where you're hoping something opens up and you snag it real quick. And of course, that leads to a whole bunch of questions of equity, right? So if you aren't computer savvy, or if you have to work a job where you are constantly traveling or you don't have the luxury of working from home and checking, the computer every 30 minutes, it makes it a lot harder to get shots.
Hannah, this is, of course, the early days of the vaccine rollout, I guess you would say. We're looking at getting a lot more vaccine coming into Illinois in the coming weeks and months. So slow rollout maybe, but does it put Illinois behind, you think, going forward? And, are we that much worse off? And will we be, say, come summertime compared to other states?
Well, we have improved. In the last 2 weeks, we've definitely gone up the rankings. I think we're now in the mid to low 30s as we rank among states. But, the Senate Health Committee yesterday held this very marathon hearing, and I think, Joe, you also tuned into it. But local health departments, when they explained the numbers of vaccine doses that they were getting on a weekly basis, and then also inexplicably for this next week, I heard complaints about their vaccine dose allocation getting cut in half, you know, they say if we continue on this pace, then it'll take us, you know, the health department medical director for Stevenson County up in the far northwest corner of Illinois, he said it would take literally 5 months for us to just get through the first dose for all the people who are in 1B. And he and some other local health department leaders, including Dr. Allison Arwoody from Chicago Department of Public Health, were pretty vocal about the fact that they were upset at the Pritzker administration's decision to open up this new, you know, this current phase 1B of vaccine distribution to folks with pre-existing conditions, these comorbidities that tend to make COVID even worse, even more deadly. Those folks, if they were under age 65, they were supposed to be in phase 1C. But, you know, the Pritzker administration heard a lot of complaints and, you know, similar to how he opened up the current phase to lawmakers last week, you know, he caved. And it's what the health department administrators explained was that, you know, sure, it might get people excited and it might feel good and be a good, you know, kind of PR gig, but you're actually just expanding the pie of people who are still competing for these very, very few amount of vaccines. And we're the ones who are bearing the brunt of that. We're receiving, you know, calls, you know, the administrator from Stevenson County, he said, we're receiving very rather nasty calls, and it's hard for them to explain the breakdown. And, you know, he said there needs to be just better education of the public that vaccines are still in limited supply. And sure, even if you're eligible, it does not mean that you have a guarantee.
Yeah, Joe, the governor has been out in front of the public since this whole thing began. I mean, he held daily news conferences forever, and he's continued to be pretty consistent on that. But is there a communication problem that's going on that's leading to some of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, once you get beyond the press conferences, which they can kind of deliver a very choreographed message, right? They know what they want to say. They know the talking points. But when you talk to local health officials, their frustration is they seem to get mixed messages, right? And there's no real rules of how they're supposed to use these doses, when they're, well, like, you know, when they're supposed to use these doses. There's no metrics that are really being measured. So their frustration is that, you know, once you get beyond the message of, hey, everybody, we're on the same team, let's all vaccinate people. Once you get beyond that, there's inconsistency, right? One week they're told they're going to get 1,000 doses, the next week they're getting 200, and they don't know why. Now the state will come back and say, well, we try to monitor people who aren't using doses as quickly as we think they should, so then we'll redirect shipments elsewhere. And the locals will say, well, what do you mean, right? What are the rules? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? And nobody really knows where all these doses are going, to even the point that the locals yesterday at this Senate hearing were saying, we need transparency. You know, we want to know where these shots are going to make sure we're getting our fair share.
Charlie, state government, I think, has always struggled when it comes to major rollouts of programs, and certainly something like this that, you know, is happening at a pretty rapid pace, you know, all the changes that have occurred over the last few months and trying to get this thing done. I mean, it's not what government often does really well. Is that fair to say?
Well, I would think in this particular case, this is something that government in our lifetimes, including mine, has never had to do before, state government at this level. We've never had this kind of a pandemic for more than 100 years. Go back to the flu in the 1918. And to try and vaccinate everybody in the state of Illinois as quickly as possible, the logistics are just really, really difficult. And part of it was, I don't think we adequately planned from the get-go, how are we going to get the vaccine, once it's available, into the arms of people. And it should have been, I think, a more centralized effort in the first place, rather than leaving it up to all these local health departments who, in some cases, didn't have the personnel. And then bringing in the commercial drug stores, which also were short on personnel from the get-go. It's always easier to sit back and look in hindsight and say, well, we should have done this, we should have done that. But maybe this will be a lesson for us the next time one of these pandemics comes along, because it's pretty certain that we will have another one at some point.
Joe, before we leave this topic, what should people be watching for and, you know, to see if the state is able to keep up with this, especially now that this vaccine is going to be, or eligibility for the vaccine is going to be expanded? What should we be watching for in the next few weeks?
I think the big thing is going to be what the feds are going to give us. And because we're getting better at ironing out some of these logistical challenges. They're really frustrating to people, obviously. But if the feds start ramping up doses, it's going to make these logistical challenges less important because all of us are fighting over more doses. I think that's one key thing. I think the other key thing is, can technology save us from the Hunger Games of fighting for shots? We are slowly starting to see apps develop and volunteer groups come in and talk of call centers where we can start to maybe, just maybe, all get on some type of a universal waiting list to where we're not worried about having to constantly try to find shots. And maybe we can get a phone call or an email or something when it's our turn for a shot. I don't think we're not there yet. And I guess that's what I'm watching to see is, will that happen?
Well, just a couple of minutes left and a couple of other items did want to mention for this week. Hannah, fill us in. The Illinois Republican Party now has a new chairman, and it's somebody who is quite familiar to party politics. It's Don Tracy of Springfield, former state gaming board chair. He also ran for lieutenant governor unsuccessfully back in 2010. He's the one that got this job. What does that mean for the Republicans going forward?
Right. It was actually pretty close. And it was Mark Shaw of former prosecutor up in Lake County, who for the second time got kind of close to leading the Republican Party. He was first, he 3 years ago after the gubernatorial primary where Jeannie Ives almost upset Governor Bruce Rauner. Conservatives were just, you know, still furious with the governor and, you know, with, as a result, the governor's handpicked Illinois Republican Party leader, Tim Schneider. And so, you know, yes, ultimately Don Tracy was voted in, but he now faces the very unpleasant task of trying to unite the Republican Party at a time where conservatives did almost install Mark Shaw for a second time. You have this nasty intra-party fight, you know, that has played out obviously at the national level, but here in Illinois, Adam Kinzinger, a congressman from Shanahan, has been leading the fight, going on, you know, being this media darling, going on TV, saying we need to rid the Republican Party of Trump and the far right elements that follow him and, you know, were the cause of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And then you have folks, you know, especially downstate, Mary Miller, the new congresswoman from Southeast Illinois. You know, she is 100% on board with Trump. She and her husband, Chris Miller, a state rep for that area also. They are the folks who are emblematic of this, you know, march to the right in the Republican Party. And so it'll be very interesting. But Tracy also said in his statement, you know, after he was elected, we have so much opportunity. In 2022, the governor is going to be up for re-election. He is definitely more vulnerable than he was a couple of years ago. I mean, COVID and his response have not been popular, not just with Republicans, but also a lot of Democrats, to be quite frank. And Tammy Duckworth is going to be up for re-election. And then every single member of the General Assembly, because it's going to be after a remap year, after we, you know, redraw legislative districts this year.
And just about 1 minute here left, Hannah. Real quick, the Illinois House this week adopting some new rules. Just give us the overview of what those are.
Sure. The new rules, a chance for new Speaker Chris Welch to kind of differentiate himself from longtime House Speaker Mike Madigan. One of the top line items is that there's a 10-year term limit on the Speaker and Minority Leader, which of course is a stark contrast with Madigan's 36 years as House Speaker. You know, a technical thing that Republicans, of course, say don't go far enough, but bills must be assigned to substantive committees every other year, the year after an election year, though that doesn't guarantee them a hearing. And then also, of course, we're still in the middle of the pandemic, as we are all well aware. And so the new rules will allow the House to have some virtual meetings and finally, you know, actually get back to work, because that's, again, just another source of angst between the governor's office and the legislature, that the governor has, you know, kind of been able to rule by fiat, by executive order, and the legislature has not been able to do much about it because they canceled their own sessions.
All right. Well, let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, Super Bowl Sunday was a big day for Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but it was also a pretty big day for sports betting in Illinois. The total handle, the amount of money bet legally, was $45.6 million, according to the Illinois Gaming Board, and the state share was $1.1 million in tax revenue. And Joe Miller, the board's policy director, said that that is historically the largest amount ever in Illinois.
Well, Joe Marr?
Yeah, I think with all this talk about the frustration with vaccination, maybe to put that into context, some good news here. The COVID hospitalization numbers, these are the number of people hospitalized for COVID in Illinois. It dropped below 2,000 for the first time this week since mid-October. And it may seem like in COVID pandemic time years ago, but it was only a couple months ago, right around Thanksgiving, that we were at about 6,200 and we were worried about our hospitals being overwhelmed. So it is really good news. We're still not to where we were at in the summer where it was as low as 1,300, but knock on wood, we can get vaccination going, avoid these variants, and maybe get out of this thing.
And Hannah.
Sure. Well, on Saturday, the Black Caucus grew by another two members with the selection of Doris Turner, a Springfield alderwoman, to replace Andy Menar, who represents Springfield and, you know, some of the surrounding areas in central Illinois. And then also up in Chicago's north side in Rogers Park area, Mike Simmons was selected to replace outgoing Senator Heather Staines in kind of an upset decision. I think most folks, they were betting, they would have bet that Representative Kelly Cassidy would have gotten that seat. But in a bit of backroom dealings, she did not. And so as a result, Kelly is going to stay in the House. And Mike Simmons, Doris Turner, they add to the Black Caucus's growing ranks and, frankly, power.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Joe Marr with the Chicago Tribune. Get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.